Chapter 30. One must keep up one's character. Earn a character first if you can, and if you can't, then assume one. From the code of morals I have been following, and revising for 72 years I remember one detail. All my life I have been honest, comparatively honest. I could never use money I had not made honestly, I could only lend it. Last spring I met General Miles again, and he commented on the fact that we had known each other 30 years. He said it was strange that we had not met years before, when we had both been in Washington. At that point I changed the subject, and I changed it with art. But the facts are these. I was then under contract for my Innocents Abroad, but did not have a cent to live on while I wrote it. So I went to Washington to do a little journalism. There I met an equally poor friend, William Davidson, who had not a single vice, unless you call it a vice in a Scot who loved scotch. Together we devised the first and original newspaper syndicate, selling 2 letters a week to 12 newspapers, and getting $1 a letter. That $24 a week would have been enough for us if we had not had to support the jug. But there was a day when we felt that we must have $3 right away, $3 at once. That was how I met the general. It doesn't matter now what we wanted so much money at one time for, but that Scott and I did occasionally want it. The Scott sent me out one day to get it. He had a great belief in Providence, that Scottish friend of mine. He said, "Colin, the Lord will provide." I had given up trying to find the money lying about, and was in a hotel lobby in despair, when I saw a beautiful unfriended dog. The dog saw me too, and at once we became acquainted. Then General Miles came in, admired the dog, and asked me to price it. I priced it at $3. He offered me an opportunity to reconsider the value of the beautiful animal, but I refused to take more than Providence knew I needed. The general carried the dog to his room. Then came in a sweet little middle-aged man, who at once began looking around the lobby. "Did you lose a dog?" I asked. He said he had. "I think I could find it," I volunteered, "for a small sum." "How much?" apostrophe he asked. And I told him $3. He urged me to accept more, but I did not wish to outdo Providence. Then I went to the general's room, and asked for the dog back. He was very angry, and wanted to know why I had sold him a dog that did not belong to me. "That's a singular question to ask me, sir," I replied. "Didn't you ask me to sell him? You started it. And he let me have him." I gave him back his $3, and returned the dog, collect, to its owner. That second $3 I earned home to the Scot, and we enjoyed it, but the first $3, the money I got from the general, I would have had to lend. The general seemed not to remember my part in that adventure, and I never had the heart to tell him about it. When in doubt, tell the truth. Mark Twain's speech at the dinner of the Freundschaft Society, March 9, 1906. Had as a basis the words of introduction used by Toastmaster Frank, who, referring to Pudd'nhead Wilson, used the phrase, "When in doubt, tell the truth." "Mr. Chairman, Mr. Putzel, and gentlemen of the Freundschaft, that maxim I did invent, but never expected it to be applied to me. I did say, when you are in doubt, but when I am in doubt myself I use more sagacity." Mr. Grout suggested that, if I have anything to say against Mr. Putzel, or any criticism of his career or his character, I am the last person to come out on account of that maxim and tell the truth. That is altogether a mistake. I do think it is right for other people to be virtuous, so that they can be happy hereafter, but if I knew every impropriety that even Mr. Putzel has committed in his life, I would not mention one of them. My judgment has been maturing for 70 years, and I have got to that point where I know better than that. Mr. Putzel stands related to me in a very tender way through the tax office, and it does not behoove me to say anything which could by any possibility militate against that condition of things. Now, that word, taxes, taxes, taxes. I have heard it tonight. I have heard it all night. I wish somebody would change that subject. That is a very sore subject to me. I was so relieved when Judge LeVentre did find something that was not taxable when he said that the commissioner could not tax your patience. And that comforted me. We've got so much taxation. I don't know of a single foreign product that enters this country untaxed except the answer to prayer. On an occasion like this, the proprieties require that you merely pay compliments to the guest of the occasion, and I am merely here to pay compliments to the guest of the occasion, not to criticize him in any way, and I can say only complimentary things to him. When I went down to the tax office some time ago, for the first time in New York, I saw Mr. Putzel sitting in the heat of perjury. I recognized him right away. I warmed to him on the spot. I didn't know that I had ever seen him before, but just as soon as I saw him I recognized him. I had met him 25 years before, and at that time had achieved a knowledge of his abilities, and something more than that. I thought, colon now, this is the man whom I saw 25 years ago. On that occasion I, not only went free at his hands, but carried off something more than that. I hoped it would happen again. It was 25 years ago, when I saw a young clerk in Putnam's bookstore. I went in there and asked for George Haven Putnam, and handed him my card, and then the young man said Mr. Putnam was busy, and I couldn't see him. Well, I had merely called in a social way, and so it didn't matter. I was going out when I saw a great big, fat, interesting-looking book lying there, and I took it up. It was an account of the invasion of England in the 14th century by the preaching friar, and it interested me. I asked him the price of it, and he said $4. Well, I said, what discount do you allow to publishers? He said colon 40% off. I said colon all right, I am a publisher. He put down the figure, 40% off, on a card. Then I said colon what discount do you allow to authors? He said colon 40% off. Well, I said, et me down as an author. Now, said I, what discount do you allow to the clergy? He said colon 40% off. I said to him that I was only on the road, and that I was studying for the ministry. I asked him wouldn't he knock off 20% for that. He set down the figure, and he never smiled once. I was working off these humorous brilliances on him, and getting no return, not a scintillation in his eye, not a spark of recognition of what I was doing there. I was almost in despair. I thought I might try him once more, so I said, "Ow, I am also a member of the human race. Will you let me have the 10% off for that?" He set it down, and never smiled. Well, I gave it up. I said colon there is my card with my address on it, but I have not any money with me. Will you please send the bill to Hartford? I took up the book, and was going away. He said colon wait a minute. There is 40 cents coming to you. When I met him in the tax office I thought maybe I could make something again, but I could not. But I had not any idea I could when I came, and as it turned out I did get off entirely free. I put up my hand, and made a statement. It gave me a good deal of pain to do that. I was not used to it. I was born and reared in the higher circles of Missouri, and there we don't do such things didn't in my time, but we have got that little matter settled, got a sort of tax levied on me. Then he touched me. Yes, he touched me this time, because he cried. He was moved to tears to see that I, a virtuous person only a year before, after immersion for 1 year during 1 year in the New York morals, had no more conscience than a millionaire. The day we celebrate, address at the 4th of July dinner of the American Society, London, 1899. I noticed in Ambassador Choate's speech that he said colon you may be Americans or Englishmen, but you cannot be both at the same time. You responded by applause. consider the effect of a short residence here. I find the ambassador rises first to speak to a toast, followed by a senator, and I come third. What a subtle tribute that to monarchical influence of the country, when you place rank above respectability. I was born modest, and if I had not been, things like this would force it upon me. I understand it quite well. I am here to see that between them, they do justice to the day we celebrate, and in case they do not, I must do it myself. But I notice they have considered this day merely from one side, its sentimental, patriotic, poetic side. But it has another side. It has a commercial, a business side that needs reforming. It has a historical side. I do not say an historical side, because I am speaking the American language. I do not see why our cousins should continue to say an hospital, an historical fact, comma, an horse. It seems to me the Congress of Women, now in session, should look to it. I think N is having a little too much to do with it. It comes of habit, which accounts for many things. Yesterday, for example, I was at a luncheon party. At the end of the party, a great dignitary of the English established church went away half an hour before anybody else, and carried off my hat. Now, that was an innocent act on his part. He went out first, and of course had the choice of hats. As a rule, I try to get out first myself. But I hold that it was an innocent, unconscious act, due, perhaps, to heredity. He was thinking about ecclesiastical matters, and when a man is in that condition of mind, he will take anybody's hat. The result was that the whole afternoon I was under the influence of his clerical hat, and could not tell a lie. Of course, he was hard at it. It is a compliment to both of us. His hat fitted me exactly, my hat fitted him exactly. So I judge I was born to rise to high dignity in the church somehow or other, but I do not know what he was born for. That is an illustration of the influence of habit, and it is perceptible here, when they say an hospital, an European, comma, an historical. The business aspects of the 4th of July is not perfect as it stands. See what it costs us every year with loss of life, the crippling of thousands with its fireworks, and the burning down of property. It is not only sacred to patriotism and universal freedom, but to the surgeon, the undertaker, the insurance offices, and they are working it for all it is worth. I am pleased to see that we have a cessation of war for the time. This coming from me, a soldier, you will appreciate. I was a soldier in the Southern War for 2 weeks, and when gentlemen get up to speak of the great deeds our army and navy have recently done, why, it goes all through me, and fires up the old war spirit. I had in my first engagement 3 horses shot under me. The next ones went over my head, the next hit me in the back. Then I retired to meet an engagement. I thank you, gentlemen, for making even a slight reference to the war profession, in which I distinguished myself, short as my career was. Independence Day, the American Society in London gave a banquet, July 4, 1907, at the Hotel Cecil. Ambassador Choate called on Mr. Clemens to respond to the toasty day we celebrate. Mr. Chairman, my lord, and gentlemen, once more it happens, as it has happened so often, since I arrived in England a week or two ago, that instead of celebrating the 4th of July properly as has been indicated, I have to first take care of my personal character. Sir Mortimer Durrant still remains unconvinced. Well, I tried to convince these people from the beginning that I did not take the Ascot Cup, and as I have failed to convince anybody that I did not take the cup, I might as well confess I did take it, and be done with it. I don't see why this uncharitable feeling should follow me everywhere, and why I should have that crime thrown up to me on all occasions. The tears that I have wept over it ought to have created a different feeling than this, and, besides, I don't think it is very right or fair that, considering England has been trying to take a cup of ours for 40 years, I don't see why they should take so much trouble when I tried to go into the business myself. Sir Mortimer Durantu has had trouble from going to a dinner here, and he has told you what he suffered in consequence. But what did he suffer? He only missed his train, and one night of discomfort, and he remembers it to this day. Oh, if you could only think what I have suffered from a similar circumstance. 2 or 3 years ago, in New York, with that society there which is made up of people from all British colonies, and from Great Britain generally, who were educated in British colleges and British schools, I was there to respond to a toast of some kind or other, and I did then what I have been in the habit of doing, from a selfish motive, for a long time, and that is, I got myself place No. 3 in the list of speakers. Then you get home early. I had to go 5 miles upriver, and had to catch a particular train or not get there. But see the magnanimity which is born in me, which I have cultivated all my life. A very famous and very great British clergyman came to me presently, and he said, "Colin, I am away down in the list. I have got to catch a certain train this Saturday night. If I don't catch that train, I shall be carried beyond midnight and break the Sabbath. Won't you change places with me?" I said, "Colin, certainly I will." I did it at once. Now, see what happened. Talk about Sir Mortimer Durant's sufferings for a single night. I have suffered ever since because I saved that gentleman from breaking the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.